before we get to the rich banquet of the Word of God, I'd like to reflect a little bit on today's saint, St. Anthony Mary Claret. I think that's how he pronounces it, Claret. Because he's Spanish, and if it was French, you'd say Claret, but he's not French. Anyway, he is a really extraordinary person, and I think it's fitting that we recall his journey a little bit, because yesterday was the World Mission Sunday, and Anthony Mary Claret was a missionary. He even founded a community of missionaries, the Claretians. I've told the story of the time I met a Claretian in Nigeria. He was a Nigerian priest, and I was there. He probably asked me why I was there. I was obviously a foreigner. And then I asked him about himself, and he said he belonged to the community of the Sons of Holy Mary Immaculate, or something like that. And I must have given an indication I didn't know what he was saying. And he said, founded by our great founder, St. Anthony Mary Claret. And I said, oh, the Claretians. And he said, no, he like chastised me. I was just standing on the sidewalk, and he blasted me for calling them the Claretians. I apologize. I didn't know that that was an offensive thing. But I got back to the Philippines, and I realized that's what they call themselves, Claretians. So what he had in his mind, I don't know. But so St. Anthony Mary Claret founded a community of missionaries of Holy Mary Immaculate, or the Heart of Holy Mary Immaculate, or something like that. And their initials are CMF. I know CMF in the Philippines, because there's a lot of Claretians in the Philippines, and they run a big publishing house, and they have a lot of missionaries. They have a lot of martyrs, too, because they were Spanish, and they were martyred in Spain and in mission countries, the Claretians. They've done a lot. But St. Anthony Mary himself, shortly after the beginning of this congregation, he was appointed a bishop and sent to Cuba. I think it was within a year, very shortly after the founding. And I would love to know the story of what that meant to the community. I think there were five priests and him, and like all of a sudden he's sent to Cuba, and how they figured out what God was doing in that circumstance, I think would be a fascinating story. He got to Cuba. It was a mess. It had been not well pastored, and so he dedicated himself with great zeal to reform of the clergy and to proclamation of the gospel and to reaching out to the sheep in his flock. And he stirred up a lot of opposition, and there was even an assassination attempt. Got stabbed or cut in the face. So is that in the Annuum way? I should have looked it up. Magnificat. Okay. I don't have a Magnificat, but I mean, that's the story. He had just extraordinary preaching gifts and extraordinary missionary zeal. And there are even reports of his mystical phenomena and just deep spiritual life. So a great example of a missionary. And as I say, that's the kind of zeal that we were reflecting on yesterday for World Mission Sunday. This is the church. The church exists for mission. The church exists to make known the gospel to the world. This is maybe not connected, but it's connected in my mind. Today, October 24, I discovered last month, used to be the feast of Saint Raphael the Archangel. Last month, we were celebrating the feast of the archangels. Is that a feast? I can't remember now. Feast. The archangels, Michael, Gabriel, Raphael. That's September 29. And I got to talking with someone. His name was Raphael. But anyway, those three angels got put together on one feast day. And usually the focus is on Michael, because the readings talk about Michael and the battle in heaven and all that. And so Gabriel, he has lots of attention because of the Annunciation. But Raphael doesn't get much attention anymore. He used to have a feast day. It used to be October 24. So it came to mind this morning. I said, St. Anthony Mary Claret has the feast day. And Raphael lost the feast day. Just a way of reflecting on how God works in time and works in the circumstances of the day and the changes that take place in the world and in the church. And holiness and missionary zeal rise above all the changes and all the opposition, because holiness, first of all, it's the power of God at work, and God is not intimidated by what happens from day to day or changes that we might think are so significant. Now we turn to the scriptures of the day. In the gospel, Jesus cures this woman who had been held in bondage for 18 years. It was a great miracle, a great healing, a great example of his ministry of setting people free, which is what Jesus does. And he gets opposition from the leader of the synagogue. Maybe that's why that Claretian priest came to mind. All I was doing was walking down the sidewalk, and all of a sudden I got blasted by this guy. Anyway, the leader of the synagogue blasts Jesus for curing on the Sabbath, which strikes us as being quite bizarre, but that we have to recognize his mindset. And there's a clue here that this gospel is not just for him, but for us. When Jesus replies to him, he says, "Hypocrites," in the plural. If he was just correcting that guy, he would say, "You hypocrite." But instead he says, "Hypocrites," meaning anyone who falls into the mindset of this leader of the synagogue is being corrected here. And what's the mindset of the leader of the synagogue? Exalting the law above its rightful place so that we can use our interpretation of the law to judge others. Now, let me back off a little bit. The law is good. The law is good. It's given by God. It's a guide. It's a trustworthy guide. When Jesus came, he said, "Don't think I have come to abolish the law. I have not come to abolish the law and the prophets. I have come to fulfill them." So the law is good, but when Jesus comes, he reveals a higher law, which is the law of love. So it's right to follow the law, unless following the law prevents us from following the law of love. So there's a higher law. This is important in our age when, especially in the United States, where there seems to be a prevailing idea that there should not be a law. In other words, the law is abolished and I can do what I want and no one can tell me what to do. This is kind of the glaring contradiction during the COVID days, when everybody's saying I can do whatever I want and everybody's also saying don't do what you want. It was, everyone became a policeman for everybody else. About how to deal with the COVID thing. I read so many articles about people in planes who got on planes knowing that there was a rule about wearing masks, and somebody would refuse to wear a mask, and then there was a controversy, and he would punch a flight attendant or something, and then they'd stop the flight, and get, you know, for the sake of 200 people to interrupt everybody's life because you don't want to wear a mask, you shouldn't have gotten on the plane in the first place. But it's one of these things, like everybody interprets the law for himself and says, "Well, I can do what I want," and then no one can tell me what to do. But that everyone else is saying, "No, you have to do what we say is the law," and everyone becomes a policeman. So the danger here is that love gets lost in the controversy. And we see this in here. You know, the Republicans have their agenda and their ideology. The Democrats have their agenda and their ideology. And as long as they're pointing at each other, it's clear to each side that the other side is completely depraved. But what about the truth? What about love? What about goodness? What about this higher level? That is lost in the discussion. And that's where this leader of the synagogue is. It's true that we must respect the Sabbath, or the Jews of that time, that was the law and it was right. Respect the Sabbath. It's not true that you can't do good for someone on the Sabbath. That's not the law. And it's not love. So what happens when we let the law, we make the law high, meaning our law or our interpretation of the law, we end up putting ourselves in the place of God and we eliminate the possibility of love. because we're at the center now. This is what he does. That's why Jesus calls him and us hypocrites, meaning you act like you're one thing, but inside you're not. You act like you're submitting to the law. In fact, you're making yourself the law. And that's hypocrisy, to be something different inside than we are presenting on the outside. And Jesus states very beautifully why it was a good thing to help this woman who had been sick for 18 years, because you would even do this for your livestock. So if you would do it for your livestock on the Sabbath day, how could you not do it for the sake of this poor woman? So it's clear. And at the end of the gospel, the whole crowd rejoices because they love to hear the truth proclaimed, and they love to see freedom bestowed, and they also love to see hypocrites being exposed. Everyone loves to see their opponents or their oppressors put down. So the heart of this is not the law. The heart of it is love. Love meaning to choose what is good for the other, to choose the good of the other. Not what we feel, not what we interpret, not what we want to impose, not our judgments, but what is really good for the other. That's love. To choose that. And this is what St. Paul is talking about here. Once we have that in mind, or once we're striving for the way of love, to follow the law of love, it's very clear how different it is from anything else. In fact, to live in love, to follow the law of love, is to be like God. This is the daring language of St. Paul. Be imitators of God as beloved children and live in love. Be imitators of God. Love, because God is love, the law is love, we're made in love, and everything we do should be guided by that law. And if it's not, well, then we're darkness. The contrast is just so extreme. Once love is the standard, anything that's not love becomes ugly and dark. This is what he says. He shouldn't even talk about these things. Obscenity and suggestive talk and immorality, impurity, greed, idolatry, corruption. And gosh, just look at it in light of love. And you say, well, who would want any of that? Why would we subject ourselves to any of that filth? But no, Paul is setting it before us, reminding us that we were once darkness. We were hypocrites. And that's always a danger for us whenever we lose sight of the law of love. Whenever we put ourselves back in the center, we become the judge. We become the lawgiver of our own doing, self-made lawgivers. Well, then we fall back into the darkness. But he's saying, no, don't be like that. Don't be deceived. Don't fall into those old traps. You were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of light, meaning live according to the law of love. That's what will transform us. And that's also what will be good for others. Not that everyone whom we serve or try to help or try to inspire will accept it. It doesn't mean that others will think we're light, but that's the truth of it. So St. Anthony Mary Claret is a great example. And he was light in the Lord, and he shed light everywhere. In fact, there's even reports that he sometimes glowed. Is that in the Magnificat? But I don't know and where I saw that. But I mean, he had that charism. He had some mystical charisms that he sometimes would, like light would emanate from him. It's a sign that that's what a Christian is. He's light. He's light. You are light in the Lord. And that light is what changes the world. That's why why mission is effective, because it's the light of God shining in the world through people who belong to him. So you were once darkness, now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of light.